In both Kansas City and Oakland, they had long histories of segregation, of restricted neighborhoods. That, of course, was the kinds of factors that gave rise to the Black Panthers in the city of Oakland. Black Panthers later had a chapter in Kansas City and many other cities. It was a time when labor unions were increasingly under stress, and both cities experienced labor turmoil and strikes.
Welcome to HWTP Sports Talk with your host, David Weinstein. Keep it locked each Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And now, David Weinstein.
Thank you for joining us. Our guest this week is Matthew Ehrlich. Matt is a professor of journalism at the University of Illinois. His new book, Kansas City versus Oakland, The Bitter Sports Rivalry That Defined an Era, tells a fascinating story of the history of the rivalry between the iconic sports towns of Oakland and Kansas City. There are two cities linked together forever by both sports and the tumultuous times of the 60s and 70s. So, Matt, it was with great interest that I picked up your book, Kansas City versus Oakland, The Bitter Sports Rivalry That Defined an Era. And I expected to find a lot of sports talk in between the pages, and I didn't. I found a lot of sports talk, but I also found a lot of commentary about society, about justice, about race relations, and about two cities that were growing up and evolving during the turbulent 60s and 70s. And it was fascinating to me, and I really think you did a fantastic job of intertwining everything that was going on and really giving a lot more of a perspective to the history of the rivalry between two cities that, at first blush, you wouldn't think have too much in common. How did you come upon this project?
Well, I lived it. I grew up as a sports fan in Kansas City. And actually, the very first professional sports event I can even remember would have been when I was about 6 years old. And my older brother was very despondent about something that had happened. And I was asking him about it. And he said, well, Kansas City just lost to Oakland. And in fact, the final score was 41-6. And so I learned very early on that for a Kansas Cityan, the city of Oakland posed special risks and a real challenge when it came to professional sports, and that bad things happened to Kansas City sports teams whenever they went to Oakland. And then as I grew older and got more interested in the social and cultural context of sports, it struck me that, yeah, these two cities really do have a lot in common, even though they're geographically very far apart, and even though their histories have quite a bit that's different. They were both minor league cities for years and years, and that fact gnawed at them. It was something that they really wanted to try to correct. Literally, they were minor league in that they had no major league sports franchises. And they decided that through professional sports, they could increase and improve their standing in the eyes of the nation. And so they decided to go after professional sports franchises. And eventually that pitted the two cities against each other, not only on the playing field, but also off the playing field. And when the city of Oakland ended up in 1967, taking away Kansas City's hard-won Major League Baseball team. I say hard-won Major League team, even though it was a dreadful team on the field. Then the Kansas City Athletics. And the Kansas City Athletics moved to Oakland right about the time they were about to become very, very good. Then that sports rivalry really heated up into something that transcended just sports. So when I decided to write the book on this subject, I decided I needed to look not only at football, which was, again, the very first memory I had of the rivalry between the Chiefs and the Raiders, but also at baseball and also just in the broader context of the time, the 1960s and 1970s.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of people today forget where the A's started off. And, you know, you mentioned that they were stolen from Kansas City. Kansas City sort of stole them from Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
To put them in Kansas City to begin with. And, you know, it was the beginning of the era where an owner could take a team and, if you don't give me what I want and you don't give me the stadium that I'm asking for, I'm going to just take my team and take them somewhere else and I'll find somebody else to do the bidding for me. And Charlie Finley did that with the A's when he took them out of Kansas City and put them into Oakland. And the parallel that was going on with what was going on with what was then the National Football League and what became the AFL and Lamar Hunt and what was going on in Dallas when he took the Chiefs that were the Texans and took them to Kansas City, it sort of mirrored each other. And to me, what was so fascinating in reading the book was these two cities, as you pointed out, geographically very much different. But what was going on in both of these cities during the turmoil of the 1960s and into the 70s, it was a complete parallel procedure going on between these two cities with race relations and how suburbia was drawing people out of the city and how the sports teams were affecting that and just what these two cities were going through. It was more than just this rivalry on the field. It was sort of a rivalry off the field.
Yes, the big move of professional sports teams really began in the early 1950s, and starting with Major League Baseball, because historically for years and years, pretty much every Major League franchise was east of the Mississippi River. The St. Louis Cardinals and St. Louis Browns were west of the Mississippi, but just barely. With changes in demographics in the cities, a lot of these sports teams found themselves in neighborhoods that were no longer seen as desirable. A lot of the teams that had been very strong in the past were no longer strong. And that was the case with the Philadelphia Athletics. They were a powerhouse for many years under Connie Mack, who was the owner and the manager. But by the mid-1950s, he was nearing the end of his life. The team had really hit rock bottom just about. And that made it vulnerable to a city like Kansas City that was looking for the prestige that would come from having Major League Baseball. And many, many other cities west of the Mississippi, Milwaukee, later on, all the cities on the West Coast, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, of course, started looking for sports franchises, professional teams to poach. And so the A's moved from Philadelphia to Kansas City. Later on, when Oakland was looking for a franchise, they looked to Kansas City because the A's had continued to do poorly in that in Kansas City, and Charlie Finley always had wanderlust. So both cities are tied together just by being part of that era when poaching of sports franchises and sports franchises pulling up stakes and moving from one city to another really became a big trend. And also it was at a time of considerable racial turmoil in both Kansas City and Oakland. They had long histories of segregation, of restricted neighborhoods. That, of course, was the kinds of factors that gave rise to the Black Panthers in the city of Oakland. Black Panthers later had a chapter in Kansas City and many other cities. It was a time when labor unions were increasingly under stress, and both cities experienced labor turmoil and strikes. And it was also a time, of course, of great change in professional sports itself, with a rising labor consciousness, especially in baseball by the early 1970s. The first strike in Major League Baseball, mass strike, mass walkout, took place in 1972. And the baseball players in particular started figuring out, hey, you know, our labor is really what underpins the whole enterprise of big league baseball. And we have been undervalued. We've been restricted on where we want to play. And owners like Charlie Finley in Oakland were very much resented by the very old-fashioned paternal kind of control he exerted over his players. So the time frame as well and the pressures that not just cities, but also professional sports in general we're experiencing also bound these two cities together.
You're listening to HWTP Sports Talk with David Weinstein, recognized by our guests and listeners for our no-holds-barred good questions and informed conversation. Don't be shy. Post your questions and comments at hashtag AskHWTP.
So you mentioned labor as one of the issues that was working in both of these cities, and that's really from the workers who were going to go watch the games there, but it was something that was really very active in both of these sports. And as you mentioned in baseball, with the Curt Flood case and the way that the players sort of sought their own value and let free agency come in and the battles they were having. And in football, not so much so till the later years until they endured the strikes, but it was something that unified both the players in both of these cities and sort of pitted the fans and the owners against each other, as well as the unions as to what was going on in two cities where things were really changing and the nature of what was going on in the cities wasn't the same as when it started and when these teams were first trying to come in and make them major league cities. It all sort of interwoven with each other, and then throw on top of that what's going on in the 60s with the Vietnam War and race relations. It sort of all melded what was going on the field with what was going on off the field.
Yeah, in football especially, race relations were a big issue because both the Kansas City Chiefs and the Oakland Raiders were originally members of the American Football League. The American Football League had been founded by Lamar Hunt to challenge the National Football League, mostly because Lamar Hunt really wanted a franchise in his home city of Dallas. And when the NFL wouldn't give him one, he decided, well, I've got millions and millions of dollars. I'll just found my own league. And that was the Dallas Texans eventually would be forced by the arrival of the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL to move to Kansas City. And the AFL, in order to compete with the NFL, really went after African-American players, especially at small, historically black colleges and universities that the National Football League had generally overlooked. And so those players had, chips on their shoulders. They really were very conscious of the fact that they had not been really heavily pursued by professional football teams in the NFL in the past. And they went to the AFL really determined to show that they belonged, which of course they did because they were wonderful players and wonderful athletes. But in going to a city like Kansas City, that had a history of segregation, they found it very difficult to find adequate places to live. There was considerable discrimination, and the same was true to a certain extent in Oakland and other AFL cities. And so race relations were very big in professional football. At the same time, they were becoming increasingly an issue in society as a whole with the burgeoning civil rights movement by the mid-1960s, which corresponded about at the time that the AFL was really coming into its own. And in baseball as well, you mentioned the Curt Flood case. Curt Flood is remembered mostly as being a significant labor case, but Curt Flood was also an African-American player. He had been born and raised, or at least raised, on the west side of Oakland in a historically African-American neighborhood. And he became notorious. One of the things that most aroused controversy around him is when he told Howard Cosell, you know, I'm just a well-paid slave, with slave being very deliberately chosen. So race was also an issue in baseball. And in addition to the labor situation that we already mentioned with Curt Flood and the strike of 1972, labor in both cities really started to come under increased pressure. And that, I think, was especially acute in Kansas City because there were a series of construction strikes right during the late 1960s and into 1970 that completely halted the construction on the Truman Sports Complex, which what is now Arrowhead Stadium and Kauffman Stadium, and halted construction on a big new urban renewal development called Crown Center near downtown Kansas City, and a new airport, and all of these things that Kansas City really saw as vital to furthering its big league aspirations. In the city of Oakland, by the early 1970s, there was a dock worker strike. And of course, dock work was key to Oakland. Oakland was very proud of the fact that they had moved into containerization of their port facilities before other cities, in particular San Francisco, and Oakland always resented being in the shadow of San Francisco. So when dock workers went on strike in the early 1970s, the same thing as had happened in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. This was a threat to their big league aspirations and to big league shipping, which Oakland was very much known for. The labor situation, again, was not just a sports thing. It also was very much an issue of contention, a bone of contention in the two cities during these years.
And, you know, what was really a big, you know, sort of bone of contention between these two cities, as you mentioned at the onset, was this desire to be a major league city. And, you know, they both achieved what all major league cities want to achieve, and that's championships. And,
yes.
You know, with the A's and with the Raiders, with the Chiefs and with the Royals, and they truly became champions. And these cities, you know, embraced them, gave them almost virtually what they wanted. And while the rivalry developed, it was, you know, quite phenomenal, I think, more so on the football field, just given the nature of the fact that these teams were in the same division, guaranteed to play each other twice a year, very often, were finding themselves in the playoffs against each other. The home and away games were really tantamount. That home field advantage was really crucial there. Not so much in baseball. They often met each other in the postseason. The, you know, animosity of the A's being taken out of Kansas City. It's not like the Raiders, you know, were taken from Kansas City. But as they continue to develop and they built these stadiums and, you know, they developed as cities and they sort of set their place on the map, the rivalry in the field never died down. It was always going to be an intense game between the Raiders and the Chiefs, you know, whether it was Len Dawson, you know, fighting against the early Raiders, or, you know, in the later days when Plunkett and the rest of the Raiders won their championships, you know, it always was a bone of contention for the people in Kansas City to look over and see what the Raiders had done, two teams that had, you know, developed out of the same mold of the AFL. And I think with, as you pointed out in the book, with the Royals and the Chiefs really getting what they wanted and staying there and cementing themselves as part of this now, what they helped to create was a big league city. I think that it really created an imprint on people there and fueled the identity of the city of Kansas City. Not that it didn't do that in Oakland, but, you know, it was more transient there with the Raiders leaving, the A's really being the only team that was sticking around, the stadium that they both shared, a lot of commonality between the city, the teams within the cities, as well as the teams outside the cities.
Kansas City is a community, in some ways, it's a misnomer to call Kansas City or any major metropolitan area a community, right? Because there are so many different communities bound up in that metropolitan area. So historically in Kansas City, you've got a two-state region and very different interests, very different concerns. One issue that the metropolitan area of Kansas City has had for a long time is just the rivalry between Jackson County, Missouri, which is identified with the city of Kansas City, and Johnson County, Kansas, just over the state line, which is identified with suburbia, over where businesses will locate, where shopping districts will locate, and increasingly where sports franchises might locate. We're not thinking so much about the Chiefs and the Royals, but mm-hmm. other things like the Major League Soccer team and so forth. But for all these differences, one thing that has always seemed to unite that metropolitan area across those many, many divisions is the presence of big league sports, and in particular the Chiefs and the Royals, and the fact that, yes, they have been at the Truman Sports Complex now for what will be 50 years in the very near future. So in that sense, Kansas City has been fortunate that it has not, since the A's left for Oakland back in 1967, there really has not been a significant threat of the Chiefs or the Royals leaving. It might become an issue in the next several years, which we can talk about if you'd like. But, you know, for the past several decades, it has not been an issue, and it does not seem likely to become an issue in the very near future. Oakland, of course, lost the Raiders once back in the early 1980s when Al Davis picked up the franchise and moved it to Los Angeles. They put together a package, including rebuilding the Coliseum, adding a seating deck that has rather sardonically gotten the nickname Mount Davis after Al Davis, it was to bring back the Raiders in the mid-1990s. And now, of course, the Raiders are about to leave town again for Las Vegas. The Golden State Warriors, who have been the dominant franchise, I guess, is, we can say, in the National Basketball Association for the past several years with Stephon Curry, is about to leave the city of Oakland for a new arena in the city of San Francisco. And that leaves the A's, and the A's want a new ballpark. And it's been a very long and contentious debate in the city of Oakland, and that seems relatively certain to continue for the next few years, about where the ballpark should be located, who should pay for it, how it should be financed, and what will happen to the East Oakland property where the Coliseum has been located since 1966. But in both cities and in Oakland as well, you know, one of the things that I found fascinating was when the A's were having their greatest success in the mid-1970s under Charlie Finley, winning three consecutive World Series, which is a staggering accomplishment. Fans didn't really care about the franchise. They just were not turning out at the Coliseum in great numbers. But when it did come to the playoffs and when it came to the World Series, they came out in mass celebration. They were always ready to celebrate the fact that the A's had brought that city with all of the issues and trials and tribulations that the city of Oakland has experienced for many, many years. That the A's were a chance for them to say, we're number one. And with everything else that divides us, just as in the Kansas City area, the racial divisions that gave rise to the Black Panthers and all the other concerns over labor and class divisions, this brings us together, professional sports. And that's the conundrum that professional sports always forces us to confront, is it's, you know, it's a big business. Owners are very wealthy. They do pit cities against one another. And cities are forced to figure out just how much they're willing to shell out to keep or to attract a team and to build new facilities with all the other social needs that are in these cities. Balancing that against the fact that, you know, this is why we love professional sports. This is the thing that gave me the impetus to write the book in the first place, is I lived and died for many years with the Royals and the Chiefs. And the fact that when those teams do succeed, it's a wonderful unifier across all the divisions that we experience. And finding a sweet spot between those two sides is, you know, confoundedly difficult.
Well, that's why they fan is short for fanatic. I think that all of us who are sports fans are fanatical about the teams that they live and breathe and they worship. I want to remind everybody, you're listening to HWTP Sports Talk with David Weinstein. I'm in the middle of my conversation with Matthew Ehrlich. We're talking about his book, Kansas City versus Oakland, The Bitter Sports Rivalry That Defined an Era. I want to go back to a couple of things that both you just talked about, and as well as had some heavy thought in your book. when you talked about where the stadiums are built, that created a problem in and of itself for both of these cities. It's about more than just location and view and how you get there. But in the case of Kansas City, was it too far outside the city? If you're trying to make us a major league city, why are you building the stadium out in what was then beginning to develop suburbia? And two other things. One, you talked about the racial divide that was occurring both on and off the field. I think that it was nowhere as, if not as evident in the batting title that was at stake between Hal McRae and George Brett in 1976. This was something where there were words that were spoken where McRae thought something was being done to make sure that Brett kept the batting title. And then, you know, last but not least, they tried to bring other sports to both of these cities. Kansas City got and lost a hockey team in a matter of 2 years. Basketball really has never been able to stay there. You touched on the Golden State Warriors moving out of Oakland now into San Francisco. They wouldn't even take the name Oakland while they were there. And for those of us who are hockey fans, who could forget the California Golden Seals, another professional team that couldn't quite make it in Oakland. So getting back to all three of those, what do you think it is about where you put the stadium that ties into the demographics? A little bit about the race relations both on and off the field, and then why couldn't they keep basketball and hockey in both of those cities?
Well, the location of the stadiums, I mean, this has always been the two big questions with building any big new sports facility is always where are you going to put it and how are you going to pay for it? And in Kansas City, the original hope was to build a downtown domed stadium. This would have been the mid-1960s. And of course, the reason the city was pining after a domed stadium, or at least some people in the city were pining after a domed stadium, was that was the big flashy new thing during that era of sports facilities, because the Houston Astrodome had just opened and it was billed as the eighth wonder of the world, and other cities wanted their own domes. But there were the kinds of conflicts that typically develop when you're trying to locate in a already developed area, the Central Business District, in this case of Kansas City in the mid-1960s. Businesses would be displaced. Some of the businesses that would be displaced were threatening to move across the state line to Kansas. We already were talking about the fact that there is a rivalry between two different states in the Kansas City metropolitan area. And a dome is just going to be, or was going to be back then, especially, very expensive to build, very expensive to heat and to cool. And parking, of course, is a big issue. And this was an era when cities were increasingly moving outward to the suburbs and sports facilities followed. So they finally ended up picking the site where the Truman Sports Complex, Arrowhead, and Kauffman Stadium are still located to this day, because they didn't have these sorts of concerns I just mentioned. And also, it was more centrally located within Jackson County, because there were city interests and there were county-wide interests. Independence is another city in Jackson County, Missouri. And most people know Independence only because that's the hometown, or was the hometown, of President Harry Truman. But Kauffman Stadium and or what became Kauffman Stadium and Arrowhead Stadium were located closer to Independence and to the eastern suburbs in Jackson County than a downtown stadium was. So it was a compromise site in that. And it was near major freeways. So that meant that there was easy access to the entire metropolitan region. And there was plenty of room for parking out there as well. So it just came down to a compromise in terms of what would it appeal to the broadest set of political interests and what would accommodate traffic at a time when that was a really big concern. You know, the whole notion of a downtown retro ballpark wasn't in anyone's consciousness and wouldn't be for another quarter century or so.
Which is what's strange, because it's doing that now. in all the cities that are getting their new stadiums. We've seen that here in Miami with the ballpark that they put in the place of the aging Orange Bowl. You see it in Baltimore. You see it in Cleveland. I'm sure that anybody who now wants to build a new stadium, whether it's soccer, whether it's football, they're talking about bringing in, tying back in the urban core and how can we get there. Look what they've done in San Francisco and San Diego with stadiums that are right in the heart of the downtown.
You're listening to HWTP Sports Talk with David Weinstein, recognized by our guests and listeners for our no-holds-barred good questions and informed conversation. Don't be shy. Post your questions and comments at hashtag AskHWTP.
And that's kind of what they hope to do in the city of Oakland. The latest plan, as I understand it, is to locate a new ballpark for the A's, not in downtown Oakland per se, but near Jack London Square. Jack London Square is right on the waterfront, just south of downtown Oakland. And the proposed ballpark's site would be just to the west of there in land called Howard Terminal that is owned by the Port of Oakland. And the controversies, as I understand them, and again, I'm kind of an outsider in all this, but as nearly as I've been able to follow them, are, well, how is this going to affect the Port of Oakland? How is it going to affect the port business in the city of Oakland? What will happen to the site where the Coliseum is now, which should be prime real estate, but it's in a area that has, over the years, on occasion, fallen on hard times economically. So who will benefit from any redevelopment of the existing Oakland Coliseum site once the team vacates and once the Raiders leave? And the Howard Terminal site, as I mentioned, is not actually in downtown Oakland. It's separated from downtown by railroad lines and highways. So how do you connect that to downtown if the interest is to revitalize the central business district and try to replicate what's happened in other cities like the ones that you mentioned? Kansas City may be experiencing the same dilemma in the fairly, not in the next couple of years, but their leases for both the Chiefs and the Raiders run out in the year 2031. And that sounds like it's a long ways off, but it really isn't. It's only 12 years away. And when you consider, like, well, if you want to build a downtown ballpark in downtown Kansas City, like in all these other cities, you've got to figure out, again, where are you going to put it? You've got to acquire the land. You have to figure out how to pay for it. You have to address transportation and parking issues. And so Kansas City very likely will be experiencing the same sort of debate and may have to ask themselves, what do we really need to do as a city, as a county, as a metropolitan area to keep these teams that have bound us together when they've won in the past in the community? That's by the way, just really quickly, the Oakland Coliseum located where it is for many of the same reasons that the Truman Sports Complex located far from the Central Business District in Kansas City. In the mid-1960s, that East Oakland industrial site was just easier, cheaper to acquire. There was more space. It was near a freeway. There was more parking. So it followed the same path, whereas a downtown facility at that point would have experienced a lot of political obstacles. You mentioned the Hal McRae-George Brett incident in 1976. For listeners who might not completely remember what we're talking about or have never heard of it, these were two teammates and friends. They were literally neck and neck going into the final day of the season of the 1976 regular season. And George Brett came up to plate. And if he made an out in his final at-bat, Hal McRae would win the batting title. And so George Brett hit what looked like a routine fly ball. The Minnesota Twins outfielder pulled up short, even though it looked as though it would be the simplest thing in the world to catch it. The ball bounced over his head on the artificial turf, went for an inside the park home run. Hal McRae then made an out, and he lost the batting title and then erupted in anger at the Minnesota Twins. There was nearly a brawl. And he said, well, this is clearly because I'm black. Hal McRae was black and George Brett was white. And it points to the fact that, you know, we look at professional sports, I guess, as a vehicle of integration and bringing people together, as we've talked about. Baseball had been long integrated for nearly 30 years by the time Brett and McRae were playing together on the Royals. But still, there was this suspicion, this mistrust. Hal McRae was notorious outside of Kansas City for being a Pete Rose type of ball player, because he had played on the Cincinnati Reds with Pete Rose. And like Pete Rose, McRae was the kind of person who would crash into an infielder. There's a very famous play that occurred a year later where he tore into Willie Randolph and would basically lay on top of him, not allowing Willie Randolph to make a play. So you could see teams not wanting him to win the batting title just because they didn't like the way he played, because he was so aggressive. But George Brett played exactly the same way. And the reason Brett played the same way was Hal McRae had taught him to play that way. When George Brett was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame many years later, he made a point of saying, Hal McRae taught me how to play this game of baseball. So the only thing that really seemed to separate them was their skin color. And the kinds of racial divisions and debates that still take place in professional sports that we have seen with the national anthem protests in the NFL, for example, are just things that are very, very difficult to get past, apparently. And we see it in other sports as well. The kinds of things that Serena Williams has experienced in women's tennis and so forth. And the last question that you raised, if you can remind me.
It was sort of tied into, you know, making the big league city a big league. Neither Kansas City nor Oakland could really hang on to hockey, or, you know, Oakland had it for a little while, but basketball is on its way out. And, you know, if you can be fanatical about baseball and football, why couldn't you hold on to, I would say, basketball easier than hockey? Certainly hockey being a more regional sport, it certainly at the time, it wasn't that popular in the warmer cities, although with the Los Angeles Kings, you can't really say that for the LA area, and Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, down here in the South. But I think at the time it would. But I think the more important question that I'd like to ask you as we wrap up here is that the goal was to make these cities big league cities. Do you think that they achieved that goal in Oakland and Kansas City? And if the franchises left, would they still be big league cities?
Yeah, and before we address that question, you know, just real quickly with the baseball with the basketball and hockey, it may be that Kansas City just was not big enough for it. Certainly with the Kansas City Scouts, it was just inept ownership, and franchise left after a couple of years. And there's been some talk with the new Sprint Center, relatively new Sprint Center, about trying to get an NHL franchise back in there. But my impression growing up there was that Kansas City was never really a fanatical hockey city. You would think basketball would have done better. You know, the Kansas Jayhawks have a huge following in the city of Kansas City, which is very near. But again, I think it was an ownership issue. It was an issue of the city having to share time with Omaha when the Kings first existed. With the Warriors, you know, they've had great success recently in the city of Oakland. It just may be that the franchise thought that they would get a better deal, and they basically went back to where they came from. Oakland poached the Warriors from San Francisco back in the early 70s, and now the Warriors are just going back where they came from. It is telling, though, that the ownership never really wanted to call the Warriors Oakland, but instead Golden State, to give them broader marketing appeal, and that really irritated Oakland. And the hockey franchise may have experienced a lot of the same issues that the Kansas City Scouts did. They also were afflicted by Charlie Finley's ownership for a few years. And so, I think that was part of the problem. But, you know, even with the travails in basketball and hockey, I think Kansas City and Oakland did achieve a big league status in part through the football and baseball franchises and through the championships that those teams brought those two cities. It wasn't completely unmitigated success. There were many failures along the way. And we mentioned the conundrum of sports, the unity and the joy that professional sports can bring a community, balanced against the very real cost of keeping and maintaining a team and the facilities it takes to keep and maintain a team. And pretty much every city has to finally decide, is it worth it? I think the city of Oakland finally decided, it's just not worth keeping the Raiders. It's just not worth trying to shell out the kind of public funds that this franchise can get from the city of Las Vegas. Las Vegas is very much following the same path that Kansas City and Oakland did back in the 50s and the 60s. And when you hear sports boosters in Las Vegas, the kind of things that they're saying, like now Las Vegas is big league. Now it's not just a place to party and gamble. Now we are growing up together with the Raiders. And yeah, it's worth shelling out $750 million in public funds to build this new stadium. Oakland apparently finally decided that, hey, you know what? We did without the Raiders for several years before. We can do without them again. They are going to have the decision to make with the A's and whether to continue to be a major city, a big league city, which is more than just being a professional sports hub. It's also the quality of life that a city can provide to its citizens and the kind of opportunities and jobs and the attention to social ills like poverty, lack of affordable housing, the tensions created by gentrification, all the kinds of things that both Kansas City and Oakland, but especially Oakland and the entire Bay Area, are coping with right now. Oakland will have to decide, and the A's will have to decide with them, is it worth keeping the team? I kind of hope that they do, and because the A's have a great history in the city of Oakland, and you would like to see them come to a fruitful compromise and show other cities what can be done. And in terms of showing other cities what can be done, that includes Kansas City, because again, by the year 2031, that city is going to have to decide, what do we need to do to keep the Raiders, the Royals and the Chiefs? And should the equivalent of Las Vegas decide to come calling for one of those two franchises and offer some incredibly lucrative deal in terms of public funds, especially that the franchises feel that they really are going to have difficulty saying no to, then Kansas Cityans, and not just the people in Kansas City, Missouri, but in that entire 5-county metro area over 2 states, are going to have to come together and decide, is it worth it? Can we still be big league without those professional teams? And ultimately, I think professional sports really has done a lot for those two cities. I think and hope that it will continue to do a lot for the two cities in the future. But ultimately, it is not the only thing that makes a city truly big league. There are a whole lot of other things that are arguably even more important than professional sports.
Couldn't agree with you more. Matt, thanks so much for joining us. And for those of you who are sports fans and who like to study a little bit about a city and how it grows up, go ahead and go out and pick yourself up a copy of Kansas City versus Oakland. It's more than just a book that talks about sports. It'll give you a little bit of insight on how things were in both of those great cities.
David, thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to our show. I'm David Weinstein, the host of Huddlin' with the Pros Sports Talk. By day, I practice criminal defense law with Hinshaw and Culbertson in Miami, Florida. But once a week, you can find me here on HWTP Radio. Remember, you can find a new episode of Huddlin' with the Pros Sports Talk every Wednesday at hwtpradio.com. With a podcast that tackles all the controversial hot-button issues from the world of sports, recognized by our guests and listeners for our hashtag, #NoHoldsBarred, good questions and informed conversation. The show is produced by Jacqueline Park and is a Sweet G Communications production. Special thanks to our guest, Matthew Ehrlich. You can pick up a copy of Matt's book, Kansas City versus Oakland, The Bitter Sports Rivalry That Defined an Era, wherever great books are sold. Thanks also to our great Huddling with the Pros team. Watch for tweets from Rachel Lena. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at HWTP Sports Talk. Missed a show? Visit our website at hwtpradio.com and download our podcast on your smart device. Well, goodbye for now. We'll see you next week.